Do you know that you can support this podcast with a small monthly contribution, as little as a dollar every month? If you'd like to do so, please visit our website at www.talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com. Thank you. Hi everyone, welcome to the Tales of an African Princess in America. My name is Ozzy. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. This week we have an interesting episode put together for you. I'm sure that you're going to enjoy this one. We have a special guest. Her name is April May. Welcome, April.
Hi, thank you.
We met on Instagram. It's amazing how many, you know, amazing people I meet on Instagram. I feel like Instagram is the best social media out there right now. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. In addition to meeting you, I've met a lot of amazing women out there. And one of the reasons I'm so happy to be here is because immediately when I met you on Instagram, I could tell you were a woman's friend. You support other women, and I love connecting with other women. So,
right.
Yes, guys, she's great, and I'm happy to be here.
Welcome. So, tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, on Instagram, we see, you know, a little bit about a person, but can you give us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I live in Los Angeles. I have a professional background in social work and journalism. I've worked for both TV and print media, and for fun, I've done a little bit of acting. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, so I guess you could say I'm a creative, right? I'm a creative type. And on my spare time, I love, you know, cooking and dancing. I'm a huge fan of This Is Us. I don't know if you're watching.
Okay. I love it as well. I mean, I saw the first season, then after that, I just, you know, there's so many shows out there. So,
right.
You got like torn between shows.
You got to get back into it. It's a great show. Social work and journalism actually are very closely related, because in social work, where I did a lot of counseling and advocacy, I spent most of my day asking people questions, helping them to find solutions, and putting a plan together. In journalism, I ask a lot of questions and I tell their story. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, I was able to use my voice as an advocate, as a reporter as well, because I could talk about the hush-hush topics and the things that were really on people's minds. So
I don't have a lot of experience with social work, but I know that it's something that, you know, you have to be really passionate about, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, when they went to your Instagram page, I found out that you're also a breast cancer survivor. I'm really interested in that, because when I was in school, one of the things that I did was looking into cervical cancer. And I'm really interested in a lot of cancer-related topics based on my career. But it's also good to hear from someone who's actually been in that situation herself. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
I can. And actually, I look forward to learning more about you, because I can see that you have a background in this. Yeah, I was diagnosed with invasive ductal carcinoma in situ. And for those who don't know, all that really means is invasive breast cancer. Okay. I was diagnosed November 2012. And like a lot of women, I knew it could happen, but I was hoping it didn't happen to me.
Okay. And how did you find out?
Well, that's, you know, that's kind of a long story.
Right.
And there's a lot of emotion attached to it. But for me, it started January 2012. And it all started with a regular cold. And within 24 hours, I could tell that there was something very different about that cold. And when I say that, a lot of women ask me, what do you mean by different? Well, ordinarily for me, a cold kind of went into my head and my nose and my throat. And then eventually would end up in my chest, right? Well, that didn't happen in 2012. It bypassed my head, nose, and throat, and it just took up permanent residency in my chest. And within 24 hours, I was having symptoms I had never had before. I was having issues with breathing, couldn't eat, I couldn't digest my food. I mean, it was just really wreaking havoc on my body. And so I went to the doctor, and they noticed that I had lost about 5 to 10 pounds. And that was just within between then and the last my last visit, which was like a couple of months earlier.
Right.
That was the second red flag. And so let me say, I kind of look at it in terms of red flags. So the first red flag was that I noticed something different about that cold.
Okay.
The second was that they noticed I had unexplained weight loss.
Weight loss, yeah.
I was not trying to lose weight. I am tiny in nature, and so weight loss is never on my radar. Right. And when I was in the doctor's office, you know, for the exam, I noticed that immediately she mentioned weight loss.
Right.
And in that moment, the word cancer kind of floated into my mind.
Did you have a family history of cancer?
At the time, I didn't realize it, but I did. My grandmother had died of cancer.
Okay.
So I didn't know. I wasn't looking for it.
Right.
But I asked that doctor, do you think this is cancer?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, no, you're too young. And she blew it off. And then as she said that, I remember noting that my right breast had changed very slightly. And so I asked her to check the breast, and she did, but she did so laughingly. In the end, she kind of told me I was paranoid to go home, eat food, get some rest, and get over it. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And in my journey, what I learned is that there is gender bias in medicine. I went on to see approximately 30 doctors that year, and all of them misdiagnosed me as being, you know, having anxiety, being paranoid. I was accused of being a drug addict or a closet alcoholic. Doctors thought I was anorexic and was lying about it. They wanted to put me in rehab centers. Yeah, can you imagine how my husband and I were feeling at that time? And then about 9 months into it, I met a woman doctor who was really good at listening, and she didn't have an ounce of arrogance in her. She promised me we would find this. And even though she didn't think it was cancer, I asked her if I could get a mammogram. And it was in the mammogram that it was determined I had cancer.
Right from the first doctor's visit, when she mentioned weight loss,
yes,
immediately your mind went to cancer. And you know, a lot of times we have this feeling, the first thing that came to your mind was actually the correct thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of times we communicate with our bodies if we listen.
Thank you for validating that, because that is part of my message to other women.
Right.
Is that when you get that whisper, it's your body communicating with you.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what that person says across the room from you or what his or her credentials are. No one knows your body better than you.
That's true.
So thank you for validating that, Ozzy.
Right. That's true. So in November 2012, that's when you got the official diagnosis, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's and you were already married at this time.
I was not. So we were dating, but we'd been together a long time. And at the time of diagnosis, it just, you know, it kind of came out of nowhere because my life was going well. And one of the things you don't know that I haven't shared is that I was at a really good place in my life. I had met somebody who was wonderful, who I knew was going to be my life partner. My career was doing really well at the time. I was rebuilding it, and it was, it was good because I had come out of a dark state of depression because my sister had passed away years earlier.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Yeah. So during this time, I mean, I was feeling so good. I couldn't believe that it happened to me. Okay.
But right.
We were together. We were planning on getting married.
Okay.
And he was there with me through the whole journey. And we are now married. We got married after I was given a clean bill of health.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a beautiful story.
Thank you. Yes.
So how did cancer impact your life? Like, how did it affect your relationship? I know you already said that you had found the love of your life, but right after you heard the words and it was confirmed that you had cancer, you know, how did that impact your relationship?
That's a great question. I'm glad you're asking that also. And I'm ready to get real with you because I think women need to hear the honesty. When I was diagnosed, I was just kind of in shock. But then after I started to work through the shock and the first week or two, I found myself wondering if my partner was going to stay with me. If there was one thing I noticed was that a lot of men leave when a woman finds herself in a health crisis. I found myself having conversations with myself and with my family that included thoughts like, you know, I don't want him to get stuck with me. And is he going to be somebody who might cheat on me? I'm going to lose my hair. I'm going to lose my eyelashes and eyebrows. And I know we all want to believe that it's not what the on the outside what matters.
But that's important as well. Yes,
it is, right? Mm-hmm. And he was attracted to me. How was this going to change my physical appearance? How was this going to change my career status? I mean, mm-hmm. he got involved with somebody who was an ambitious go-getter.
Mm-hmm.
And now this was going to change. So what I did, having a counseling background, it helped me have the conversation. So what I did was I sat down with him in tears and I just told him the truth. I thought we had a great relationship. I loved him. I knew that he loved me, but I didn't want to get my heart broken after I was in chemotherapy and at the worst possible point in my life. I gave him an out. I actually wow. said, I would much rather know that I had this great relationship with you mm-hmm. and remember it for being great than to have to find out later that you cheat on me or that you abandon me. Mm-hmm. And of course, he said the best thing he could say. He looked at me and he said, you know, oh my goodness, is that what you think after all of this time together?
Right.
I'm not with you just because I'm attracted to your outside. I see your heart and I love you for you.
Oh, that's unconditional. Oh.
Yes. And I never had that before, you mm-hmm. know? So he said, we're going to get through this, babe. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through this and we're going to get married. And we're going to look back on this and we're going to see how it strengthened us. And even as I share this with you, you know, I can feel myself, you know, wanting to tear up because I knew in that moment that I truly had found my life.
The one.
Yes. Right. So now that's the good part of it. But there's another reality to that. And that is it does change your body. It did affect my self-esteem. I didn't know it. Because, you know, when I brushed my hair out, I just kind of manned up. What I call manned up, society wants to use the word woman up. So whatever works for you.
Uh-huh.
But I found my inner strength and, you know, I just wore a bandana and a hat. Okay. And I just wanted to survive. But at some point it occurred to me that it did impact me on an intimate level because how do you feel sexy when you don't have your hair anymore?
Absolutely.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I eventually had a double mastectomy.
Wow.
I didn't have my breast anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're asking, I'm being honest about it. There are things that I've had to work through. And when I talk to my husband, it sounds like he's had his stuff to work through. But it's not the same stuff that I'm working through, if that makes sense.
Wow. It sounds like such a heavy burden was thrown at you and your fears are valid. You know, we all have fears. And I think that even though you look back at it and you're like, give him an out, I feel like you did the thing that was most logical at the time. You know, we all think about it. You know, everyone is self-conscious at some point. You know, about their looks, you know, we want to be accepted by others and then even more so by the one that you love. And it only makes sense that when you, you know, receive that kind of news, you want to know how it's going to impact their life as well. You know, so I feel like having such a great support system, you know, is so important to your journey as well.
It is.
What are the things that you feel are some of the things that helped you get through this whole ordeal, like the treatment, you know, what kept you strong the whole time? You know, were there times when you felt like, you know, I can't do this anymore? And when those times came, if you had, you know, those times, what did you do?
Well, one of the things I feel is very important in my life and in everyone's, and it's whatever it means to them, is faith.
Right.
I did pray. I do have regular Bible studies.
Okay.
And I tried to maintain those when and where I could, and I prayed incessantly because it was very scary. Another thing is, in addition to the supportive partner, I took my time and chose a team of doctors and surgeons that I knew I could trust. A lot of women hear the words cancer. They go into a state of panic. They say, cut it out of me. And they take the first doctor that comes along.
Okay.
And part of my mission is telling you, don't do that. Okay. Unless the doctor says you could die tomorrow, take all of the information, go home, pray, journal, talk to others, whatever you need to do to connect with yourself and to, and to get to a place where you can reason. And then start interviewing doctors and surgeons. Go to multiple doctors and surgeons if your insurance allows you to do that. And find someone that you can trust. Because what I learned out of this is if you can trust your oncologist, if they are hearing you, if you can trust your surgeon, then you can let them do their job and you can do yours, which is focus on getting better. And I want to say this because you're going to find this since you follow me on the blog and social media. And one of the things I developed during all of this was that I believe that just like any other thing you take on, whether it's a 5K, 10K, doesn't matter what it is you're doing, develop a training program. And in that program, I did a lot of research on Eastern medicine and things that could build the immune system. So I kind of followed that kind of a diet, an Eastern medicine diet, and I worked out regularly. I did exercise. I did walking because not everybody can do the same kind. Walking is the best form of exercise, I think, for the mind and body. And I kind of, as a kid, I grew up in a home where my dad watched boxing. He used to box for exercise. So I started kind of doing my own definition of boxing in my home. I danced a lot. Like I said, I prayed a lot. I kind of developed an approach to building the mind and body up for chemotherapy. So I would say to other women, definitely take time to prepare your mind and body. Do that so that you can feel a little bit of confidence when you walk in.
Okay, so you mentioned that you had over 30 doctors throughout the course of your treatment and recovery. So how did you find your doctors?
I actually went online and I pulled up a list, you know, a list of that was on my insurance, pulled up a list of the top 10 cancer care providers in the country. In my case, UCLA is on that list. So then I started calling doctors that I knew that I could trust and said, do you know anyone? And it turned out my allergy and asthma doctor had gone to school with someone. And he said, you know, I think you're going to like her. So in the end, I found her through him. And I went and I met with her. And you're going to know when it's the right doctor for you because every other doctor I interviewed said things that took away my power. They didn't want to listen to me. Right. One male doctor said to me, well, you're in the game of cancer now, so it doesn't really matter what you think. And that was, and this was a what you would call a renowned doctor. I had other doctors tell me, you know, well, again, okay, we're hearing you, but we're going to do what we think is right for you. So I kept getting a lot of, we don't care about you. It was as if because I had cancer now, it was my fault. In fact, I felt like I was being shamed, like I did something wrong to get here. And I lost my rights as a human and as a woman and as a patient. And when I went to see this other doctor that was recommended to me, my husband and I went in there. He was my boyfriend at the time. We went in there believing this wasn't going to work. But within 10 minutes, she was doing all of the things that were right for me. She listened to me. She answered every question. She didn't roll her eyes. She didn't talk to me in a condescending tone. And within 15 minutes, I said, okay, let's get started. So you know in your gut what's right for you.
Right. Then this is the second time that, you know, I kind of want to point that out is the first time when you went in to get the diagnosis, when you went in to say, you know, I have a cold and they were telling you, okay, you have the weight loss. You know, it came to your mind that this could be cancer. And now the second time is when you finally found the right doctor for you, you felt it within your spirit that, you know, this is the right person. So it's so important to listen to the inner voice, I would say. So important to listen to our bodies.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about your treatment and your recovery. You know, you fully recovered from it. What was that like?
It was scary, to say the least, as you can imagine. And I have to share this because it's just almost laughable. You're going to laugh. And I mean, women, you got to laugh too. Through some of the tough stuff, right? So let me say that I knew when I was probably about 15 that having babies was not on my radar because I was afraid of pain.
I think every woman secretly thinks about that.
I'm so glad you get it. Yeah, and I always say I'm more like my dad in that way than my mom. My mom had five kids and she didn't have any medication through the process. Now, I'm like my dad. I bump my toe and it's like, do I need surgery? What does this mean? So I got the male DNA there. So I said, I don't think I'm going to have kids, but I would love to adopt. So anyways, fortunately, I landed mm-hmm. on a man who was like, oh, you know, I could do with or without it. I'm good the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. you know, I never did anything. I didn't go bungee jumping. I didn't do anything that was risk taking because I didn't want to end up at the hospital. So now I get right. a diagnosis. And what does it mean? I practically live at the hospital. So, you know, mm-hmm. I find out they're going to give me this medication, and the medication has a big X on it that says dangerous, poisonous, like in the cartoons. So that was right. scary. But you know, mm-hmm. my husband was there, you know, holding my hand. I had a wonderful team of nurses, and the first treatment was the hardest and the worst. It was the moment that tested me because mm-hmm. within 3 days, I felt so physically drained. I got sick in a way I didn't know you could get sick, and I got weak in a way I didn't know you could mm-hmm. get weak. And it took about 10 to 12 days before I recovered from that first chemo. And you asked me about how it affects, you know, the relationship. During that period, my husband was very loving and affectionate, and he had a wet towel on my forehead and all of that. Aww. But during that time is when we had like our first biggest fight ever.
Wow.
And it was good. I understand now it was kind of cathartic because we were both holding in these emotions. And it's kind of a funny story. It's kind of like he was mm-hmm. there living his normal life. Even though it wasn't, because he was hoping it was mm-hmm.
his new normal. Right. Mm-hmm.
And he was sipping on a glass of wine, and I was sick, and I felt like we needed to call the doctor. And as he was sipping his wine, he said, well, let's just wait and see if it gets better. And I lost it. Right. Like, how dare you mm-hmm. sip on wine when I am in this battle?
Right?
So anyway, right. we kind of had this blowout, and it actually was, we were totally fine and laughed about it later. But after mm-hmm. that first week, I have to say, even though it was a challenge, I did lose my ability to taste, and I did lose my hair and all of the things that happened. Overall, it wasn't as bad as it could have been, and it wasn't as bad as I imagined. And a lot of women don't want to take chemotherapy, and you will hear people, it's my pet peeve in social media, I've called out, mm-hmm. they'll tell you that they can cure cancer by drinking a tea. And
I've definitely heard
yes,
that.
and they criticize you. I was criticized. You know, there were people who stopped talking to me because I chose chemotherapy. They said I didn't. Yes, what? They said, well, you must not have enough faith in your God.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Talk about ignorant thinking, right?
I think an essential topic that we kind of need to talk about on another day would be like the role of faith in medicine, because a lot of people claim to believe in God so much that they don't want to take any medicine. They don't want to, you know, it's so hard. And I feel like the two should kind of like be side by side. I don't think that one is exclusive of the other, but then that's another topic.
And I agree with you. So yes, I'd love mm-hmm. to talk to you more about that. So in the end, I got through it pretty well.
You know, sometimes people think that while they're being there for you, they feel like you have to listen to them.
But I did too. I actually had people call me up and give me a list of horrible symptoms that weren't even related to my type of chemo. What you find out when you are faced with something like this, you find out whether or not you invested wisely in relationships.
Right.
And I found out I didn't, to be honest with you.
Who would you say were the people that were most supportive when you were going through your cancer ordeal?
Well, I have to say, it's almost embarrassing to admit, but really it was just my partner and my dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my dad called regularly. My family lives, you know, about an hour away. So I talked to them regularly. And then it was only my partner. And I say only because mm-hmm. I would go into the chemo suite and I would see people with like 10 groups of women, and they would be cheering them on. And you see people online shaving their heads for their family. And my husband, boyfriend at the time, said, look, I'd hate to do it, but if you want me to, I'm happy to shave my head in support of you. Mm-hmm. But in reality, even though I didn't have groups of people flocking to be by my side, I couldn't have had a better person. I mean, we turned it into our one day every 3 weeks that I packed lunch. We saw it as a picnic because you kind of have to turn it into something good in my mind. Yeah.
Yes.
So it was really, he gets all of the credit. He handled all of the doctor calls when I had trouble with them. He scheduled mm-hmm. those appointments, and he dealt with the insurance. And if you have somebody who can handle the insurance,
oh, yeah.
you owe them everything, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about how your view of life changed after you got the diagnosis and you went through the treatment. You know, there are certain things that we hold on to and we think these are the things that are most important in life.
Yeah.
But when we go through a very difficult experience, that definitely changes. So how did that change for you?
Well, it changed me almost immediately. And it changed me in every possible way. So when I was in the doctor's office and the oncologist was sitting before me and he said, "It's cancer." He said it in a way like he just couldn't wait to deliver that news. Oh. He's lived his whole life to tell me that one. And then he said, "We don't know how long you have." Those were not accurate words, but it was, you know, what I call fear tactics. And he used it. And in that moment, as I could hear myself screaming inside, unlike a lot of women, I didn't fall to the ground because I wanted to hear everything I could because I needed the information. Inside my mind, I was having flashbacks of my life and how I have lived it. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I made that conscious decision. If I survived it, I was not going to go back to life as it was, because the way it was that I was always in pursuit of the success society said we should have. Mm-hmm. And even though I loved my career choices, there was no balance in my life. No balance. So the first thing that changed for me was that I actually stopped working immediately. I was in a position I can do that. Not all women are. I stopped working to focus on health and life to fight cancer. And then I said, there's going to be a change in my life. And I had always wanted to go out on my own and start my own business or be a freelancer. And I didn't have the courage to do that. It gave me the courage to do that.
Okay.
So I now work towards balance and I encourage balance. I choose family and personal life and health first, something I didn't do before.
Okay.
I believe that your home and environment deserves more attention than your career, whatever that is, because that is what fuels you every day. That is what brings happiness. That is what invites you to stay there. I think it can help your health. It can improve your health. So those are ways that change for me. And also the kind of people I draw into me now. I no longer socialize with people or choose people in my life who don't have a value of life. They're all about climbing the ladder. It's not going to work for me anymore because I think you have to have a healthy balance. So
that's right.
Even though it was ugly and I wish I could undo it, I pray I never go through it again. I am thankful for the fact that I could take something good and that it changed my life forever in a positive way as well.
Wow. That's amazing. So I noticed that you have a blog now. When did you start this blog?
This is actually a different blog that I have now. Before I was diagnosed, I started looking at ways that I could go freelance. And I thought blogging was kind of a good way to do that. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't come up with the right theme.
I love your blog. Really? Like, you talk about things. And what I love about your blog is that you're real about it. You know, a lot of times you read blogs and it's more like people are advertising for a company. You know, they're not being real about, does this work or not? Things like that. Yeah. But when I read your blog, I feel like you're coming from a place of care primarily. You're not coming from a place of just buy this product or just do that or do that. You know, it's always, how does this impact your health? And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about your blog.
Thank you so much. And I'm glad I'm conveying that because that is really important to me. I did not want to be a person who, and I hate to say this, it's going to sound wrong. It's going to come out wrong. I'm just going to say it, but quote unquote, sell out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to sell out just because I wanted the numbers, because I wanted the reviews. And so this means a lot to me that you see that I'm conveying that in my blog. But the initial blog I had, which I have now been asked to start it up again, was called Cafe Cancer. And that was my first one because when I was going through this process, you know, what I discovered was that you're in it alone. And even if you have good friends, and as in my case, my best friend and my partner, now my husband, at the end of the day, you have to make the decisions and they are life-changing decisions. And what I discovered in Western medicine was that they didn't help me with that. You know what they did tell me to do though? It kind of went like this. Uh-oh, sorry, you got cancer. We don't know if you're going to live or not, but you need to go home and cut your hair and shave your head because that's the best way to cope with this disease.
Mm.
That made me mad. is what it did. And as someone who worked primarily with women in counseling, as a woman, that is when I started saying, I need to do something to help women. I need to give them the truth where they can come here and ask questions and get honest answers and find real information and kind of cut through the red tape. Then as time went on, I think I started to realize as a cancer survivor, I wanted to do more than read about cancer. I mean, we still like fashion. Mm-hmm. We still write. We still watch movies. So anyway, I started the Lifestyle Brief. And as I always say, as you probably read, I'm kind of growing up there, even though I'm a journalist and I know how to write news and copy and tell a story. Blogging pushes me to find my own voice.
Thanks for sharing that. Not only did you survive, but you also going out of your way to empower other women, empower people who are going through similar things. I think that's just amazing. So I'm going to ask you something. It's been on my mind. So you talked about how this affected your self-esteem. And then I know that during the course of your treatment, you went ahead to have the double mastectomy. You know, how did you get your self-esteem back? You know, how did you get that sexy back?
Listening to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please visit our website, talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com. You can also email us, talesbydrozy@gmail.com. You can follow us on social media, on Facebook, Tales of an African Princess in America, on Instagram, African Princess in America. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a rating on iTunes. Welcome back.
You know, how did you get your self-esteem back? You know, how did you get that sexy back?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer I have is, I don't know if I got it back yet.
I feel like you have, really? Just listening to you. Yes. You know, you can tell when someone is very confident when you're speaking with them. And I feel like you have that. You might not be at 100% of where you were before.
Right.
You know, I don't know where you were before. But you sound really confident. And,
thank you.
And when I visit your social media, I get that feel.
Yeah.
You know, so
thank you.
I'm curious, really curious about that. Like, how did you get that back?
It is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. I am still grappling with my hair, and I don't feel that I look the way I did before. I spent most of my life trying to look TV perfect, is what I call it. And I finally achieved it enough. I achieved it enough that I could fake it really well. And so now I don't recognize myself. Okay. So one of the things that you asked a few minutes ago was, you know, what are changes? Well, I had for many years, I was a blonde. I dyed my hair blonde. People thought I was born blonde. It looks better than my real color. But one of the things I really wanted to know was what I would look like if I were a brunette again. I'm now a brunette, and that means the makeup changes and everything, and your skin changes with chemo. So one of the things I'm doing is trying to nurture myself mentally and emotionally. Trying to remind myself really that it takes time. I feel like I'm going through my second phase of puberty. So I'm taking good care of my body. I'm exercising regularly. I feed my mind with good things, including, like I said, my spiritual aspect. My spiritual life is real important to me. Okay. I make sure I eat well. I exercise. I'm trying to learn to sleep better. In all honesty, it comes down to patience, and I'm experimenting again. So one of the things that did impact my self-esteem, and I didn't know it, was the fact that I had a double mastectomy. And it took me 5 years. It's been just now 5 years. And it took me 5 years to get reconstruction. And I just did that a month ago. Yes. And I didn't know it was going to change how I felt. But it does. And it changes it because now I have what they call in the cancer business, you know, breast shapes. So I look, if you looked at my body today, a lot of women get bigger breasts and everything.
Right. I was going to ask you that, but I was like, no, that's being petty.
Oh, no, please ask me, because it's one of the things we're talking about. I'm a very petite woman, and I went into it saying, you know, maybe if I could just get out of training bras, that would be good for me, right? So when I went to the plastic surgeon, I was like, if you could just, you know, put me back to normal or somewhat normal and get me maybe, you know, out of a training bra, I would feel great. Turned out that, again, you talked about that whisper and your instincts. Well, mm-hmm. my instincts was actually right on. My body is too small and go much bigger. And my skin is a lot of women may not know this, but you can have thin skin. And if your skin is thin, if you go too big, it can actually tear the skin. So, thankfully, I found a surgeon. That was a long haul to find the right surgeon. And that surgeon was great. I kind of feel like she just put me back together. So I'm the same size as I was. So now when I put a dress on, when I put a shirt on, I don't have to, you know, wear a crew neck all the time.
Right.
So that really helped me. Right now, there's a lot of women out there who's saying, I'm going to forego breast reconstruction.
Right.
And that's okay. That works for them, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to work for you. And for me, I just want women to know, even though it just put me back to what I was before, mm-hmm. that really helped my self-esteem. And so now I'm experimenting with makeup again, and my eyelashes aren't entirely back. So you know what they say in show business? Fake it.
Fake it. Right. Put the lashes on.
Yeah, so I'm learning to wear lashes, something I didn't have to do before. And I found a really good hairstylist. You know, my hair is like grown in, but it's not as healthy as I'd like it to be, because one of the things, you probably know this because of your profession, but one of the things chemo does is it catapults you into menopause.
Right.
So now you got double the problems, right? Double the trouble. So I found someone and I said, hey, how do you wear hair extensions? How do you?
Okay.
And I paint my nails and I buy lipstick. And it's really the everyday things that we do for ourselves that moves us towards getting our sexy back. And that's the words I actually use. I jokingly say to people, I'm getting my sexy back.
I think it's self-care, because sometimes, like, when I work too hard or I don't take as much time to care for my body, I feel less sexy.
Correct.
I noticed that. But when I got to take out time, like you said, you know, put a little makeup on, paint my nails, those little things, you know, they actually go a long way to making me feel like, you know, I'm looking way better right now, you know?
And so, thank you. That's the word that I couldn't find, self-care. That's the one word that sums it all up, because you're right. Mm-hmm. It makes a difference in how you feel and how you present yourself. And, you know, I just got to throw this in there. I was watching a show one day with Christie Brinkley, and she's older and she looks great. And she always has, and she does have a surplus of money and all the best people in the world. But it doesn't take away from the fact that these words that she spoke make sense to me. She said, as we get older, or whatever it is we're going through in our life, we have to learn to put a little more effort into ourselves. And I thought, shoot, she's right. Even if we're not the same age, I am, like everyone else, I am aging. So I took her advice and I said, put a little more effort into myself. And I would say that has made a difference as well.
Okay. That makes a whole lot of sense. You know, I can totally connect with that. Putting in a little effort, self-care, that goes a long way to how you're feeling. Another thing that I pulled out of it was, just don't feel guilty if, you know, if you feel like reconstructive surgery is for you. I know a lot of people who will say, no, don't do it, you know, be content with the way you look right now and things like that. But if you need to do it, if that's what's going to make you feel a whole lot better, then you need to research it, find out, like you said, find out what's appropriate for your body, and then don't go out of your way to get something that's too big, because that could become a problem as well.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I would say is, if you want to try something new, talk to someone who already has done it.
Yeah.
You know, or, yeah, because they'll tell you, you know, what the real pitfalls are and what the upsides are, I guess. And you get a better feel for it before you actually go into it. So you're absolutely right.
And I would absolutely say, you know, drown out the noise on the outside, on the outside, because sideliners will always have ideas, suggestions, feedback, and criticism. But until you get in the game, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, if I may just be bold and say that, because I did have that. There are people who have tried to shame me. There were celebrities, you know, actually one of them, I think I'm going to feature on my podcast, who reached out to me and said, this is a mistake if you do this. If you do this, you're going to regret this. Well, the thing was, is that she did it because she wanted larger breasts, okay? And so for her to tell me, it didn't feel right that she had a right, that she even thought she had a right to tell me how to live my life. So thank you for putting that in the words, because if there's a takeaway, I would say, and to sum it up, listen to your body always. Never doubt yourself. you know, and I say that on my blog, drown out the noise, okay? Drown out the criticism. Everyone has an opinion, but you got to live with your decision. And the other thing is, don't rush into surgery right away. Go and see a plastic surgeon, because what you do in surgery, what they do when they remove the cancer, dictates what you can do in plastic surgery reconstruction.
Okay. Okay.
And look me up. I'll be there for you.
Of course. Of course. Okay. So I know cancer was a big part of your life for the past couple of years, but now that you're fully recovered, what are other things that you're excited about, that you're excited to share about on your blog? And also tell us where, what your blog is and where we can find you on social media.
Okay. Well, the one thing is that I am now married, and that was a great moment, a great day in my life. So I can now say that I'm a wife officially. I do blog, and you can find me at thelifestylebrief.com. Okay. And as you know, because you and I have been going back and forth for some time, I am starting my own podcast. Thanks to you, I found a place to host it. So thank you for that, Ozzy. But that's going to be called, as of right now anyway, Imperfect Living. But you can find me, just find me in social media under at Imperfect April, or you can find me at thelifestylebrief.com. And I am starting to be, in addition to this podcast, I've been invited now to be a guest on two others. And I think... there's a woman who reached out to me and asked me if I would do some speaking at a conference. So I'm feeling really excited about those things, and even more excited to be here, to be alive. And I am so pleased with the way I look at everyday life now. I feel like I see things from a more simple perspective, and that that helps me to see all of the wonderful things I do have in my life, as opposed to looking at the negative. So I've got a new outlook. I'm getting my sexy back, and I have some opportunities.
Right. I'm excited. I'm excited for
you. Thank you so much.
And so whenever I meet someone who survived, and not just survived, but is helping other women, I feel like that's something that is just out of this world. So thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for giving people who are actually going through this right now some hope, you know, that there's light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And thank you for sharing that experience. It's a very special thank you to your husband, because I feel like he played a huge role. When someone is sick, it's not just that person that is going through that. A lot of times the caregiver or whoever is supporting you at that time is also going through that process, you know, and so I feel like he played a huge role, and I just want to say thank you to him as well.
Yes, thank you.
And I'll be excited to listen to your podcast when it does come out, because I know that you have a lot of exciting things to share. I feel like it's going to be very informative, and we're going to gain a whole lot from that. So
thank you.
I'm excited about
and
that.
And just so we're clear, you are being featured on my podcast as well.
I would love to be on the other side of things. I feel like, you know, a lot of times I interview people, but yeah, I feel like we all have a story to share. And thank you so much. I would love to
do
that.
Absolutely. Oh, no, that podcast is going to be about all of the women, and you're one of them. So I'm
thank you so,
so
much.
I'll be in touch, and thank you for having me, Ozzy. I so appreciate you. And I'll look
thank
forward
you so
to
much.
Talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much, guys, for listening. If anything, trust your instinct, trust your body, and surround yourself with people who listen to you, people who you can trust, and people who support you. And that will go a long way towards your health and wellness. All right, guys, have a great rest of the week. Bye-bye.
Do you know that about one in every three people in the United States listen to at least one podcast every month? That's millions of people listening. And do you also know that every month, thousands of podcast listeners listen to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast? Well, do you have a business, service, or event that you would love others to hear about? Then look no further. To promote your services on the podcast, send an email to talesbydrozzy@gmail.com today. Or you can visit our website at www.talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com.